We're up to Mizmor Gimel. We're towards the end. Let's read the Mizmor from the beginning, and we'll get into the end of the Mizmor. As we mentioned before, that this Mizmor has three parts. There are three.
I'll be away because I'm getting the booster today.
Okay. It should be well. It should be gesund. Arichas Yomim. Tamari, I like your hat. We're Shchodesh Nagya. Soon. Soon.
Tell him today won't be the problem. The next day or two will be the problem.
Tamari, thank you for this gift. Okay, let's learn. So this Mizmor of Kalman should be gesund and well, everything should go good. Okay. Everything needs the Yachad Shemaya. Everything in this world today. Okay, so we have over here this Mizmor Gimel is broken up into three parts. David here is describing an event in his life where David was running away from Avshalom, his son. And Avshalom, his son, he formed a conspiracy, a rebellion, a kesher, a coup. Okay, he wanted to remove his father from office, from being the melech, and he would take over the malchus. And David had to run away. David is writing this mizmor in reflecting. Now that we discussed this yesterday, when did he say these words? Did he say the word, we're going to discuss some of these things today. Did he say the word mizmor? Did he already sing this as a song as he was running away? Well, that's what it seems to say, al derech pshat. Mm-hmm. But as David was actually fleeing, he was saying a mizmor. We discussed this yesterday because it could have been a lot worse. And mizmor l'David, bivarchoi, when he fled, mipnei, from before Avshalom binoy. Avshalom, as we learned, was a child that he had from a eshes yifas toyah. And what did he say? Mo rabu soroy. I have so many enemies. How numerous are my enemies? Rabim, kamim, oloy, as we mentioned. Rabu means I have many enemies in number, in quantity. I have many enemies in quality. Quality and quantity. There are great people who are on the team of Avshalom. Rabim oimrim lenafshi. Many, many, or if you want to say that Rabim means that the great people, the people who are very exalted in spirituality, they are misled and they say concerning lenafshi. And Rashi lenafshi, concerning my neshama, ein yeshu osa loy. Veloikim, that there is no salvation lo to it. It here is Lashon Zohar, obviously, not lo. And lo either is going back on the Nefesh. The Nefesh sometimes is referred to in Lashon Zohar, or lo is going on, they said, concerning my neshama. What do they say? That there is no salvation to David. There is no salvation in Yeshua Soloi. There is no salvation for me, the person who possesses this neshama, the person who is the host of the neshama. The body is a host of the neshama, or it's referring to the neshama itself. They lokim in salvation from Hashem. As Yeshua also comes from Hashem. And how long will this go on for? Selah. We're going to discuss this soon. Either Selah means, well, maybe it's only a sentence for a short term. Punishment, you know, even when a person is punished, there's a limit to the punishment. Selah means forever. It's not temporary. There is no hope for me forever. That's one translation. Others say the word Selah means this is the truth. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise. Selah is another word for MS. Another interpretation which we're going to see is that this word Selah has nothing to do with the Mizmar. It's nothing more than a note. It is a musical note. It is an indication to the choir, to the composer, to the Levim on the Duchan, that at this moment they should raise their voice. They should adjust their voice or the melody. We're not at all familiar with what this is all about. And by the way, as you all notice, the Ta'amei HaMikra are very bizarre. If you notice, you see on the word Rabim, page 24, there's an Azla Geresh, and there's a revi'i on the same word. You never have something like that in Chumash. You see, you have here Yeshuasa, a shalsheles. There's very rare to have a shalsheles, Yeshuasa. What is this all about? So, and then look at this, a yerach ben yamo, under the word oimrim, there are traps. that you almost never ever see in Chumash. Very, very rare. What are they doing here? So the Mefarshim say that we know that in the Ta'aneh HaMikra of Sefer Tehillim, Emes, Sifrei Emes. Emes is Eoiv, Mem is Mishlei, and Sof is Tehillim, Tilim. These three Sefarim have a different musical melody. They have entirely different systems. So the Ta'aneh HaMikra are different. It's not about very relevant for us today because we anyway don't lay in public. We never lay in public Sefer Iyov, Sefer Tehillim, Sefer Mishlei. It could be that years ago, a very, very long time ago, they would lay in these Sefarim in public Shabbos Mincha. Shabbos Mincha, after the Haftorah. After they would lay in the Torah, they would lay in Kriyas HaTorah, they would lay in Haftorah. You may actually go to Shul on Shabbos afternoon. So after they lay in from the Torah, they lay in the next parasha, three aliyos. Everyone sit down, find your seats, open up the Herz Chumash, the page 342, and we're now going to read the Haftorah. The Haftorah of Parshas Noach Mincha. And what do you read from? Kisuvim, the writings. You don't read from the prophets. The prophets you read from in the morning. Shabbos morning, you read from the Nevi'im. And Shabbos afternoon, you read from the Kesuvim. And what would they read? I have no idea. All different things. Obviously, the Kesuvim includes Tehillim, Eoiv, Mishlei. They had some system. They had some type of... the same way we have a selection. Today, our selection has been standardized. But then the selection of even of the Nevi'im was not yet standardized. The rabbi would decide what he wants to learn. Could you imagine you go to shul today? Can you imagine you go to shul today and you have no idea what the Haftarah is going to be? And the rabbi, he makes a decision. The rabbi is a baki mufluk in Nach. He knows it on his fingertips.
He had to be, he made the decision earlier because they were Megillahs.
They had the whole set in shul.
Yeah, but today, you know, today we have Svarim. That day you didn't have printed Svarim.
No, they had in the shul. They had the Nevi'im, eight Nevi'im. They had in the Aron HaKodesh. So whatever the rabbi decides, this is what he wants to read today. Why? Because that's the news. Or that's what his wife told him to read. So he would read whatever. So when it comes to Shabbos Mincha, when it comes to Shabbos, it's the same exact thing. You read whatever it was. There was a cycle maybe, or maybe there was a decision that was made by whoever was in charge in that Kehillah to lay. They read from Kisuvim. And obviously they read with a unique musical melody. And the musical melody has been established by the Mesorah. And the Mesorah are the Ta'aneh HaMikra. But the Ta'aneh HaMikra for the Chumash, for these three Sefarim, Eoiv, Mishlei, and Tehillim, is unique. It's not the same musical melody that we lay in when we lay in the Nevi'im, the prophets. Now, by the way, we know that we have many musical melodies. Think about it. We have Chumash. And we have the Yomim Noiroim, a different musical melody. And we have a melody for the Nevi'im. And a melody for Megillas Eicha. And a melody for Megillas Esther. And a melody for the other three Megillas, Shir HaShirim, Koheles, and Rus. Some want to say is that there used to be, there were three different melodies. A different melody for Rus, Koheles, and Shir HaShirim. It was lost from us. So today we lain all three. The remaining three Megillahs, we lay in the same. Shir HaShirim, Koheles, and Rus, we lay in the same. We don't lay in, and even these things themselves, we don't even really know the precision of all the different Nishchas. I think someone once asked Yuri Wolman, he's the one who lays in the Chaim Berlin, or Rabbi Wolman, who lays in Chaim Berlin, he lays for a very large crowd, a very chashal olam. And he asked him a certain truth that he does on whether it's the Yom Nirohim, whether it's in Koheles. How do you do that? So he says, I don't know. I just make it up. I make it up. Okay, so if he can say that, what's left for all of us to say? Now, what about the Ta'aneh HaMikra for Tehillim? It's not lost from us. If you search enough, it's available. It's available. There are recordings. There are people who actually know the melody for Tehillim, for Shira Shiri, for Tehillim, Eiv, and Eiv Tehillim and Mishle. It's out there. There are recordings. You can probably find it online.
On the website, on that, the Dinim thing, somebody asked him about it recently, and he did it.
He did it, yeah.
But I erased it, like whatever it is.
Oh, that what, on that chat? Okay, so there are people who know it. I once listened to it. It didn't sound very, I guess it's an acquired taste. It's an acquired taste. But, okay, so this, so now just to add to the mix, to make this a little more complicated, is that only in Sefer Tehillim, we'll see inside Tehillim and in Mishle, do you have the word Selah. The word Selah only appears in two Sefarim, in Tehillim, it's called in the Mefarshim Tilim, and in Mishle does the word Selah appear. And it's not a coincidence that the Tamei HaMikra of Tilim and Mishle and Eov are unique. So it could very well be that the word Selah, according to this interpretation, is not just a word. The word Selah is an elaborate Tamei HaMikra. It's a musical indication to the composer, to the choir. I'm not sure, is it to the singers? Is it for the mashayrim? Is it for the people that play the musical instruments? Is it for the conductor? For the lamat seach? For the conductor? Okay, these are some interesting ideas. There are a lot of different opinions on this, and we'll come to this in a few moments. I want to first want to finish the parak. So they say about me,
I wonder if David HaMelech, he was called Ish Yodean again.
Okay.
In Sefer Shmuel. Then again, I wonder if he composed the melody for
TV. Oh, who could?
With the melody.
Okay, that's very interesting. Who is the one, even for Tafa, the Kriya Satoira, who is the one that composed the melody, even for Kriya Satoira? Who composed the melody for the Haf Torah? Who, the Nevi'im, who composed? It's not so clear. You want to suggest that maybe that David himself composed the melody for Tilim in the Beis HaMikdash. I mean, what melody did the Nevi'im sing? So we have really no record, and it's not, I always like to suggest is that each mishmar had its unique flavor, just like that's why there were 24 mishmaros. The 24 mishmaros brought diversity into the Beis HaMikdash. I really believe is that you have all these different opinions regarding all the different things about the Beis HaMikdash. Was the menorah round or was it a V? There is no way to know this. Rashi, you cannot be medayik in Rashi. Rashi, you can literally read the Rashi both ways. There's no way to prove from Rashi if the menorah was the V, like the Lubavitch promotes, or round. And in fact, our scroll, they put both. You have the Rashi, a beautiful, beautiful, very precise illustration of the menorah in their Chumashim. And they present both. They present the V menorah, I call it the V menorah, and they present the round menorah, because you read the words of Rashi, the way Rashi, how he describes the menorah, ba'alachsayin, you can interpret it 50-50. It's not mukrach. So who's not this? And everyone agrees. This is clear as day. Everyone agrees. They're both kosher. No matter what the story is, they both fulfill the description of the Torah. The Torah is not rigid to the point where it has to be one way. They are both kosher. So who's not to say that in the Beis HaMikdash they had two menorahs in storage? When the mishmar from Kvar Chabad came into, they had a mishmar. No, they had their own. They had 24 cities, 24 mishmaras. So let's say today you would put this in modern terms. There was a Kvar Chabad, and they have Kohanim, and they come into the Beis HaMikdash. What is the first thing they do? They go into the storage room and they take out the V menorah, and they put it there in the Azara. And for 1 week, they're in charge. And when the next week comes, and the Kohanim from Satmar, they come, they go in and they take out the V menorah, and they put it in storage. They don't destroy Chas Shalom. And they take out the round menorah. They do it their way. And what about the Lechem Aponim? How do you bake the Lechem Aponim? Some Achleks in the Gemara. Was it a square? Was it a circle? How do you position the menorah? You do it mitzafon ledadim or mizrach lamayrav. Everything, every single little thing. What about the melodies? What about the melodies? The levim from each of the mishmaras. There were 24 mishmaras of levim. What was the melody that they sang? What was the havara? How do you pronounce the words? So there's no question, each mishmar had its unique flavor. Each mishmar, each mishmar was located in its own city, with its own minhagim. Today it's hard for us to imagine because we live in the global melting pot, the global village. Today technology has reduced the entire world to one minhag. Art scroll, stam halacha is art scroll, stam mishnah, raneir, stam mishnah is art scroll. You don't know what to do in shul, whatever it says in the article. You know, excuse me, what it says in the article is one of 20 minhagim. If you'd go back before the war, the shtetlach, these little communities in Poland and Europe, all over the world, everyone did things very, very different. And in fact, today there's a plethora of svarim published recording the minhagim, the unique minhagim of different kehilas, small kehilas. And we are records, there are survivors, there are records of how things were done in this particular kehila. And you read the way things were done, it's fascinating. It's not the way we do it today in America. And that's how they did things. And there's reasons, and there's longest. There are different kehilas. Who's not to say that when the Kohanim, they came, they took over every week, there was a hostile takeover in the Beis HaMikdash. There were 24 mishmaros. Each mishmar, they don't live as a global village. Each mishmar lived in their own city, own kehila. They came in and they took over the Beis HaMikdash. They did things their way. And that created a very unique personality, a very unique flavor in the Beis HaMikdash. There's not one way. Let's say a person has to bring a karban. If you're a Lubavitcher and you're bringing a karban, and you know that the Lubavitchers, their mishmar is going to be in 2 weeks, you know what? I can wait 2 weeks. I want to go when my chevra is going to be there. My chevra, they do things this way. There are many ways you can do the many halachas, and everyone has their psak halacha, their rabban, and their psak halacha. You know what? I'm going to wait 2 weeks until I made a neder to bring a carbon oila, and I have to go to Yerushalayim to bring it. So you know what? I look at the calendar, and the calendar says that in 2 weeks, Kfar Chabad, they are taking over the Beis HaMikdash. I'm going to wait 2 weeks to go and bring my carbon. I'll see my people there. They're going to sing the melodies. They're going to sing Uforatzta when I get there. They're going to do things. They're going to do things the way I like. They're going to have the V menorah when I get there. I want to go when I feel comfortable. And then you'll have a Kalta Litvak. He'll wait until his mishmar, the Litvaks, take over the Beis HaMikdash for 1 week. He'll go. Then they'll turn off the lights, everyone will shuckle. They'll wait until he feels comfortable. Okay, everyone does things their way. So when it says over the word Sela, obviously every Mishmar has their interpretation of the word Sela. Sela is a musical note. It is an indication that the choir should do something different. Whatever that is different is, according to what it is. Okay, we're getting sidetracked. Pasuk Vav. Ani with this yes, Ani Shachafti Voishana. Wait, we didn't do that. Pasik Dalit, the Atan Yu Hashem Mogin, but you are my shield. Kivodi, you are my honor. Kivodi, you are, let's translate it very simply, Kivodi, you are my pride. Hashem, I take pride in you. And you Umeirim Roshi, you are, when I think about you, Hashem, I am uplifted. I am uplifted from my state of depression. Koilia el Hashem ekra, with my voice, do I call out to Hashem, vayaneni, and Hashem answers me. From where do the answers come? Ehar kotshoi, sela. The answers come from the holy mountain, sela, that's the truth. Or sela, this is an eternal, always, nothing will ever change.
Interestingly enough, though, when we daven in the morning, you have to Al Rishonim. By Nusach Ashkenaz, it says, "En el kimzu asecho."
Yeah.
Nusach Sfar, it says, "En el kimzu asecho sela."
Mm.
It is the one word. There has to be something that.
It has to be, yeah. Interesting.
What's the entire of the word sela?
Sela. Okay, we're going to talk about it. You have three times in this mizmar. Okay, Vashem answers me, Mehar Kotcha sela, which means this is an eternal, this is, nothing's going to change. What this is a guarantee. Hashem, there is no tzila. If you want to translate the word sela to mean MS, or you want to translate to be le'olam, it means this is an eternal truth that when a person davens to Hashem, there will always be an answer. In one way or another, there's no such thing as a tzila leaving, going before Hashem, not coming back, answered to some degree. We have no idea how this works. We do not see it happening all the time, and it can take maybe 100 years. The prayer may end up being fulfilled on our on someone's great great grandchildren. You never know, but there's no it's true. Hashem answers us from His holy mountain. It is emes. You may not realize it, but it's emes or li'olam. This is something which will never change. Don't be influenced by the umayis ha'olam who think that you know we're done. We have been replaced, and our prayers are not significant. Now we come to the next, the third. This is where we're up to the third section. The third section says, David says, "Ani shachati vo'i shana." I lie down and I woke up. And I lie down vo'i shana and I go to sleep. That's a very big bracha. How many people do we know? I was also including. You can lie down, you can't fall asleep. Sambia. People, it's a terrible thing. It's a terrible thing to not be able to fall asleep, and you're not here or not there. You're dead tired. You can't do anything. You can't lift. And yet you can't fall asleep. It's a terrible, terrible, terrible sickness. And David here is saying, I lie down, v'ishana, I fell asleep. Wow, that's a very big bracha. We can't take anything for granted today. A very big bracha, a person is able to have yishuv hadas to fall asleep. Heki tzoisi, and to wake up, a person should wake up the next morning. Okay, how many times Rachmanu Litzlan, these horrible nightmares, people don't wake up. Ki Hashem yismecheni, Hashem supports me. Interesting, support, there's an element of support that Kadosh Baruch Hu supports me in, three things. Can't take for granted anything. You have a bed to lie down on. Not everyone has a bed to lie down on. You go and you see these homeless people, Rachman Litzlan. You see these homeless people all over the place. It's unbelievable. You go to Manhattan, what goes on with this? Even here also. So to go to Manhattan, I used to go spend some, and like unbelievable, wherever you turn, people lying in the streets all over the place. And even these very wealthy neighborhoods, all over the place, lying on the street. They don't have a place to lie down, a bed to lie down on. And to be able to fall asleep is a bracha, and the bracha to wake up, these three words, each of these three words are incredible, incredible blessings. Ki Hashem yismecheni, Hashem supports me. You need the support of Hashem, the siyata shmai, even to achieve these three things. Let's see, Rashi, is there Rashi on this? Yes, Rashi, Vav, ani shechati v'yishana, libi otom b'do'ogo v'fachat. I lie down, my heart was sealed with worry and fear, heki tzoisi, but yet I woke up mida agosi from my worries, ki botachti v'Hashem, ki Hashem yismecheni. Rashi is waxing homiletic. Rashi is not translating the words l'fi pshuta shel mikra. Rashi over here is saying, he's adding much more into the pasuk. He's adding something that doesn't say. David over here is injecting that when I went to sleep at night, when I went to sleep, I had a lot of daigas. I went to sleep, what's going to be? What is going to be with my life? I'm in a lot of trouble. My life is in danger. My heart was otum. It was closed. Otum means it was sealed. I wasn't able to accomplish anything in life. I wasn't able to have a positive outlook to achieve because my heart was filled with the ogah v'fachat.
Which should allow him not to be able to sleep. That's amazing.
Okay, so you're right. So you're saying something very interesting. It's true. Yeah. Normally, these things would prevent the person from falling asleep. But let's look at it. Rashi's looking at it on a different level. He's saying David was able to fall asleep. And we know this, but we can relate to this. You go to sleep at night, you're able to go to sleep. But when you go to sleep at night, you say to yourself, you know, I'm done. I have no hope. It's a sorry state of affairs. It's a very, very, you go to sleep in a state, who knows what's going to be tomorrow. My heart is autumn because I suffer from daiga and pachad. Yet,
that's the
Bobo. Yeah, but you are eating meeting, Boyker. If only it was the previous
said,
morning.
See, Hashem Slecheni is like he says, Mestiyatu Dishmaya, the whole thing.
Oh, no, okay. Right, that was what we said before. Right, but Rashi's not saying that. Rashi, that's what we said before. Rashi's always saying that the word ki Hashem yismachini is to be interpreted backwards. And Rashi don't say ki tsoisi means Hashem took me out of my state of pachad and daiga. Hashem lifted me out of the daigos and the pachad of life. How was it that heki tsoisi? I was just awakened, removed, it was lifted. It's only because of siyata d'shmaya ki Hashem yismecheni, because I had faith in Hashem. That is also adding that into the pasuk. I had faith in Hashem, and through the faith in Hashem yismecheni, that pulled me out of pachad. You know, some of the religious psychologists, you know, people today, we all know, unfortunately, this depression, this clinical depression, and there are medications. And there's a very big debate among all the professionals. When is it appropriate to give a person medication? Medication has side effects. Medication, there are a lot of different ramifications to taking medication. When can a person be? When can speaking to someone, a psychologist, when can he help a person to lift them out of depression, where he does not need to come onto medication? And when does a person sink into a point? When is there a point where he's diagnosed with clinical depression? There's a chemical imbalance in his brain, and so sometimes it's clear as day. There's a chemical imbalance. There's nothing you can possibly say to a person is going to make a difference. He needs to take medication. He needs to be hospitalized. He needs professional help. And sometimes a person doesn't need medication. He needs chizuk. He needs someone to knock some sense into his head, or to comfort him, to lift him up. And then you have people that are somewhere in the middle. You have people, there are three categories. If you read the magazine, this is like one of the big, big topics in the magazines. It used to be, at least now, I don't really talk so much about this. I don't know that I read the magazines all that much, but it used to be, they used to talk about this a lot, about, the three categories. There are people, there's nothing to talk about, they need to be hospitalized, they need to take medication, someone has to monitor them, hulu hulu. And there are people that don't need any medication, they just need to pick themselves up and get back into life. And then there are people, there's a very large class of people that are in the middle. They're in the middle. They might indeed benefit from medication. Is it good for them? Is it not good for them? Is it a crutch? Is it going to dull their senses? Is in their side effects? Do they even know what the right medication is? It's a big guessing game. And v'chulu, v'chulu, v'chulu. So David Aviyah says, I lie down in a state. So this sometimes bothers me. So they're all different techniques. People that are in the middle, they're all different techniques to pull people out, to go to a psychologist, to lie down on his couch, and it'll pull you out of it. And then there's a whole debate, you go to a religious psychologist, or you go to a goyisha, you go only to a non-Jewish psychologist. You don't want to, mixing in religion does not necessarily work for everyone, but there are plenty of these religious psychologists out there, and some of them are very good, and some of them, can cause more harm than good. And when you want to add into the uplifting of spirits using religion, it's a very dangerous game. You really got to know what you're doing. You got to know who you're talking to. You got to know the person's hashkafa. You have to really know, is the person a religious person? Just because many of us, we walk around with black hats and dark suits and white shirts and learn the whole day, are we really religious? Okay, how religious are we really? I mean, no one knows what's going on under the hood. Okay, we all try. Our goal is to become religious. Our goal is to achieve that Yirah Shamayim. But until we get there, where are we really holding? And when you go to a psychologist who's very religious, and there's some very successful religious psychologists, they probably, the real successful religious psychologists, the first thing they sniff out of the person is if they're really religious. I mean, of course they're religious. They daven three times a day. They put on tefillin, the Shomer Shabbos. But you understand what I mean. And if a person really, in the panemius, has a munah, that goes a very long way. It goes a very, very long way in lifting a person out of depression. not talking about the category of the chemical imbalance people. We're talking about people that do not have a chemical imbalance, but are just deeply depressed. Deeply depressed. Can there be help through dibur? And what kind of dibur? You want to talk about different, you know, there are techniques, or do you wish to talk about religion, to talk about emunah? Not so simple. David HaMelech certainly did not have a chemical imbalance. There's no question about that. Okay, so David HaMelech is not in category number three. You can't say that. That would not be fair to say. Torah is dealing with healthy people. I mean, mentally healthy people. But David's depressed. You can't deny that. There's no way you're going to convince anyone that David wasn't depressed. Everyone is depressed. How did David lift himself out of depression? Emunah. That's pretty good. That's pretty good. It doesn't work for everyone. Talk to the psychologist. They'll tell you it doesn't work for everyone because not everyone is religious. Not everyone is religious. Even though they try, even though they're good people and they're trying to become religious. For real. David ki Hashem yismicheni. This is a very powerful pasuk with Rashi for the mental health profession. Okay, I once was like 3 or 4 years ago. Someone asked me to help. I was working for Torah Anytime. We were working for this other. They did an event, a mental health conference. I should go. I was a part of the team. I worked with the volunteer work with other people to do the fraternity time, to record it, to record it, to live stream it. So when you go to these events, you have no choice but to listen to the speakers and to make the preparations. Who are these people? To learn all the big machers in the industry, in the film community, and it was an incredible experience. It was an incredible experience to hear what some of the biggest people in the field have to say about mental health. I learned a lot. There's an enormous chachma in mental health. And everything I'm telling you now really is coming a lot of it from that. And when you look at this pasuk, this is literally a whole course. You get a PhD just from this pasuk here in Tehillim, according to the Parish of Rashi. Ani shochafti vo'ishana. I lie down, I went to sleep. Me, what does that mean? I am afraid and I'm worried. Yeah. Okay, two words that are read.
Hello.
Yes? These are two words. Two words which are red flags. Red flags. I am pachad. I can't walk out of the house. I'm afraid. I'm afraid of my own shadow. I'm afraid to look in the mirror. I'm afraid of everything. I'm afraid of breathing air. I'm afraid of failure. I'm afraid, you name it. Pachad. This fear. Daiga. I'm worried. Worried sick. These are two words which are red alerts. Red alerts. And that's what David says about himself. David says, I was a patient. That's what he says. You don't have to be embarrassed about this. That was one of the major themes about this conference. There's nothing wrong if you have an issue with mental health. It's no different than if you have a cold. It's no different if you have a cold. You blow your nose. If you sneeze, it means there's something in your nose that has to be clear, and your throat has to be clear. So, person is depressed. There's nothing to be embarrassed about. There's nothing wrong. There's no stigma. There's nothing to worry about. We'll fix you. Give you some medicine. We'll give you some medicine. We'll go and you go. You blow your nose. You'll clear your cough. You'll clear your throat. You talk it out. You'll finish. Look at this pasuk. David says, "I was the patient. Ani shochafti. I lie down on the couch of the spook. What's it called? The spook of the what is it called? The psychologist. What's the code word?
The shrink.
I lie down on his couch." Vishana, and I felt he hypnotized me. Hypnosis. That's also a big topic. Hypnosis. I fell asleep. Hypnosis. Why did I lie there on his couch, and why did I undergo therapy of hypnosis? Why? Because I was afraid. I suffered from the illness of Daiga, and I suffered from the illness of pachad. I have a very long choice in the phone book of different psychologists to go to. I could have gone to the irreligious psychologist. Everyone has a new technique. Everyone has a specialty, how to treat depression. And they're all good. They're all good for the right person. And some people, religious people, who have emuna shleima, yirei shemayim, you know who they go to? They go to people that talk religion. And it helps them. And that's who David says, I went to. I'm a religious person. I strive to become close to Hashem, yira shemayim. So I went to a religious psychologist, and it worked. It worked. I was able to hekitsoisi, to awaken from my depression through the which therapy? Which therapy worked for me? Ki Hashem yismachim. Emun in Hashem, everything will be okay. Even though everything is dark, the world is a scary place, there's a lot of problems, pachan daiga, through emunah b'Hashem I survive. This Rashi over here, and this pasuk is mamish, an entire course in the world of psychology. Okay, next. That's only one half. There's another 20 half of what the pasuk is referring to. We'll see if we have time, because we have to move on to the next mizmar. Not more than in a day or two. Pasuk Zayin, Lo ira me'rivavos om, I was not afraid of the multitudes of people, of the nation. I guess over here, om, over here is the collective noun. It doesn't say amim. It says om, of the people. Asher saviv, shasu oloi. Now the word shasu oloi is a very complicated word in this place. Rashi over here gives two perushim. Rashi says, shasu loshon shi'iyo. Rabbi Chol, you want to comment on this old French word?
First, what is shi'iyah?
It means confusion. It means chaos, like the Shoah. It's the same word as the Shoah, Holocaust, the Holocaust. Kirabin. That's one parish. The second parish, the set.
I don't know what that is.
There are two parishes. 90% of the Mefarshim attach the word shasu means to set, like some. It's to set. I'll do the second parish first. The many nations, Asher Saviv, Shasu Oloi, they with precision surrounded me. The nations set, S-E-T, they set themselves around me with precision. Okay, I'm turning it over. They set themselves around me with precision, with the ultimate precision to attack, to launch an attack. A sophisticated battle plan was put in motion against me. There's a multitude of nations which surrounded me, and they were shasu, saviv, shasu. Those two words go together.
Yeah, we had the same discussion by eight shasu
al palgei moyim. Eight shasu, that's the word. Shasu means to be replanted. That's a different word. That's shasu.
Not
the Lamed.
Has that discussion,
okay, could be. I don't know, but over here, the word shasu means to set. David is derech pshat. David is describing the time Avshalom. Avshalom.
Set is the usual translation.
Yeah, where is set? But Rashi doesn't say that. Rashi says she'iyah, which means confusion, chaos. Chaos. If let's see, we have look at the mitzvahs. David, the different parish of here shasu. He learns samu like a mem sum. Set. V'chein shatu v'ashamayim p'yem, they set their mouths. They opened up their mouth. They set it against heaven to say bad things against Hashem. Look at. Let's see the Malbum. The Malbum. The Eir HaMizrach.
By the way, I looked at the word rivavot, and it reminded me riv, with the son riv.
Quarrel.
And I said,
does anybody say
something like this? The Targum.
The quarreling. Okay, you sound very good.
It's not multiple of Anashim.
Okay, Merivos means the quarreling. You're saying very, very important. Rav Kalman is saying the word. If you look in the Targum, Loi Ed Chal, I'm not afraid, Mi Matsusa, from the quarreling. Riv. I translate the word rivavos means the multitudes. Lashon of rivavah.
The normal pshat.
Not necessarily. I don't know what's normal. You don't know what's normal anymore these days. But over here, Merivvais, the Targum says Merivvais clearly does not mean the multitudes. V'heim alfei men, v'heim Rivvais Ephraim. V'heim alfei Menashe. So there, Rivvais Ephraim and alfei Menashe means 10, Revava is 10,000. Lush Rabin, Rivvais means 20,000. Alpha Elif is 1,000, Alpha is 2,000. So we learn from that those words that the Shekhinah rests upon 22,000 people. When there are 22,000 people, Rivvais and Alpha means is the combination of 10,000 times 2 and 1,000 times 2, 22,000. The Chazal and Hashem came in Har Sinai, came with 22,000 malachim. Even though Hashem has an infinite number of malachim, Hashem selected la alfei rivavah. Very good. By Lavan, Lavan, you shall be la alfei rivavah. Okay, rivavah. Also the same idea. Rivavah is 10,000, and elef is 1,000. So it means there in that context as well is the doubling, 22,000. So I assume that the word made rivavos means the multitudes. It means 10,000, 20,000, but it's also is an exaggeration, an hyperbole. It means many, many. But it's not what the Targum says. The Targum says the word comes from riv. Riv means to quarrel. Vahi riv ben roye miknei Avram ben roye miknei Lot. There was a quarrel between the shepherds of Avram and Lot, and that's what he says over here. I'm sure we'll look at other mafarshim, but they'll probably say other things. I don't see this. Look over here. Let's see. Mitzudas David. Mitzudas David. What does he say? Lo ira meiroi. You see, he disagrees. The Mitzudas David is not following the Targum. He says from the abundance. Okay, good. Okay, but what is the word shas? The word shas is a much more complicated word. Most of the freshmen on the page type the word shas to mean set. Set.
Set in place.
Set in place. They are strategically positioning themselves to attack in all different ways in political arena. In the military arena, in capturing the hearts and minds, in the media, the enemy. Today we know that in modern warfare there are many, many fronts. You have to attack. You have to conquer all the media, right? You want to win a war?
Communications.
You have to be in charge of the mainstream media. You have to have the people in technology on your team. Social media, search engines have to be part of your team if you want to win any war. So you can censor and you can silence the opposition. In the political arena, you have to have allies. We live in the global village. You have to have your neighbors have to be on your team as well in agreement with you. In military, you have to have koyach. You have to have the military power. You have to have money. There are many different.
Diplomatic
arena. There are many different platforms which you have to succeed in. Be dominant in order to succeed in the modern world. Nothing has changed. The more things change, the more they stay the same. David HaMelech here says, Lo ira, I'm not afraid. There are multiple platforms that my enemies have dominance over.
Multiple fronts.
All over. They've totally conquered me in every dimension. I'm not afraid. Lo ira. Well, I'm not afraid of the multitude of nations asher saviv shasu Allah that have very delicately, with precision and strategy, have surrounded me with. I'm not afraid. At the end of the day, I will prevail against all of these dimensions of war that are coming my way. I'm not afraid. David HaMelech, you see, reading to the word David, he knew everything. He saw the whole world. Years ago, what was the war? In primitive times, there was no diplomacy, there was no technology, there was no media. You want something, you just take out whoever has the biggest sledgehammer wins. Okay, it wasn't such a complicated world. Germ warfare, this, that, all these politicians, a whole chagadia. You never heard something where a judge. You never heard such a thing in ancient times, where even 5 years ago, where a judge has to tell the jury, a judge, don't be influenced by the mob outside that is threatening to burn down the courthouse. He said this. Don't be influenced what the President of the United States said. So he said, President of the United States says that this person is a white supremacist. So don't, just because the President of the United States said, passing, that this person is a white supremacist, you don't have to be influenced. You don't have to be influenced by the President of the United States. We're living in a world, I'm telling you, a world like none other. Okay? The judge tells, President of the United States, he already decided. He already decided the person is guilty. He made a decision. The judge told it to the jury. I know what the President of the United States said. It's what he said. That's what the President of the United States said.
No, I wasn't disputing that. It's the word, half the newscaster can't pronounce the word supremacist.
Even could I. That's not a chiddush. That's not a chiddush. Yeshiva Bacha. Supremacist. He couldn't. So the president has the right to go past the decide this and tell him. And he'll know what he says. So it carries weight. You can't tell me not. You can't say not. It's you know, it carries weight. The whole world. And also, by the way, you know, your lives are in danger. They're going to burn down the courthouse. So you better make, so it's very likely you'll be influenced and you'll decide that an innocent man is guilty. No, you should try to clear your mind and try to examine the evidence and make a clear decision. You have to even say that? Is that even necessary to say? It's very frightening. David says, I'm not afraid. Nothing has changed, nothing has really changed since David. David says, there's a lot going on out there. And I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid. I'm going to do. Hashem is on my team. I'm not afraid. Okay, let's go further.
By the way, this pasuk was a popular song back in the day for those who remember.
I can sing it during the break. A little entertainment.
Now, Rashi in his first interpretation doesn't say this. Rashi says the word shasu lishon shi'iyo. If I'm not mistaken, the word shi'iyo means chaos.
Shumama.
Okay, chaos, like the Shoah. Similar to the word Shoah, which is it's interesting because it's almost the complete opposite of the second interpretation. The second interpretation, which everyone else says shasu, which means samus, to set, means precision. There is a very carefully choreographed attack being launched. That's one way to fight a battle. The other way you fight a battle is another way to make a battle. Maybe this is what's going on today, is to create confusion. Create confusion, just confuse. There's no such thing as a male, a female, right, wrong, MS, Sheker. Just create a state of confusion, chaos. Then you won the battle. David is saying, you know, look what's going on over here. I'm the father. This is my son is rebelling against me. Everyone knows that I'm right and he's wrong. I mean, yet my enemies have created in this world confusion. Nothing. MS, what is truth? Define truth. What is right? What is wrong? What is... No. Everything... There's no such thing. All there is confusion. Misinformation. Whatever you call truth is... Or disinformation. Misinformation. All these different terms.
Confusing the facts.
Yeah. This is what it is. So that's what it is. Asher, Saviv, Shasu. They have surrounded me with confusion. People are doubting. Is David really legitimate? Is he not legitimate? Did he commit a crime? Did he not commit a crime? Is he this? Is he that? Just spread information that will confuse the minds, poison the minds of the people, and that's how you win. That's how you win. This is Rashi's first interpretation of the word shasu olai. Rashi, in the second interpretation, says something different. No. Everyone knows this, MS, the Sheker, everyone knows the details with clarity. What my enemy has done is they've just outmaneuvered me. Okay, they have launched a sophisticated military, executed a sophisticated military plan. Okay? West Point. You go to West Point, they teach you strategy. They have the best strategy. They won. Two interpretations which capture two completely different approaches as to how to conquer your enemy. Next. Let's do Rashi one more time. Shasu loshon shio. The Yeshem, some say shasu kamo samu. To set. Kamo leman shisi. I will set also sign my signs. When Moshe went to Paro, there it was done with setting. Hashem, see, it's interesting. This opens up a whole new understanding of this contrast, the two different words. And Harashi learns the story of Yitzias Mitzrayim. The way Hashem conquered Egypt was not through chaos. I mean, at least at this point, Asher Laman Shisi Ososai. I will carefully, with precision, set signs in Egypt to make them aware of the MS Bini Bechori Yisrael. I'm not going to conquer the Egyptians through confusion. Maybe there was some confusion as well also. But there was also, obviously, this pasuk speaks volumes. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu has come to conquer Egypt, it's, I'm going to set with precision in place signs so that the Egyptians should become aware of the MS. Who has Hashem? Who are Klal Yisrael? What's going on over here? And that's Rashi's second interpretation. This is what David's enemies are trying to do to him. Pasuk Ches, Kumo Hashem. David pleads to Hashem, Hashem, rise up. Hoshi'eni, save me. Eloikai, my God. Okay, so here you have over here two different expressions. First, Kumo Hashem. Hoshi'eni Elokai, Hashem, the Midas HaRachamim is associated with the word Kuma, and Elokai, which really comes from Elokim, Midas HaDin, comes from the word was associated with Hoshi'eni. When it comes to
the whole Perek is talking Hashem, except one.
Elokim.
Elokim.
Elokim, right.
Because he means Midas HaDin, because he's sin. This is what people say.
People are saying that because of you did that with Basheva, so therefore Midas HaDin demands.
But he said, no, Hashem.
Hashem is Rachamim. Temper the din with Rachamim.
Yeah.
Wait, wouldn't you think it's mercy for me, din for my enemies?
Kuma Hashem, rise up Hashem, that's Rachamim, Hoshi'eni Elokai, save me, Elokai, din.
Isn't that just description who Hashem is?
Yes and no. Everything can be interpreted on many levels. You can't ignore the fact that Hashem is Midas HaRachamim and Elokai is Midas HaDin. You cannot ignore it. Now you can say, like the Mitzvah says, you know, poetic repetition. Obviously this poetry, and on a very simple level, is just repeating itself again and again in different expressions for the purpose of to make it sound pleasant. But obviously, there's another level of interpretation, and there's precision here. It says over here the word Elokai, a social
relationship. He says, Elokai, he keeps kol oivai. The against the oivim.
The enemies.
Not for me.
Not for me. Right.
Kuma Hashem. Kuma Hashem.
Avrachmon is upon me.
And then
obliterate my enemies.
The Elokai.
The Midas HaRachamim is for me, and the Midas HaDin is for my enemies. My enemies shall suffer the Midas HaDin. Okay, Ki Yaki says, Kol Oivai. Now this is the past tense. And this, all the Farshim say the same thing, that this we're not going to repeat every time, that in prophecy, it's as if it already happened. When a person is saying words, when a person is praying for the future, in prophecy, we mix the tenses very often, past, present, future. When you have faith that it's you're going to succeed, it's as if it has already happened. Ki kisa eskol oivai. You've already smitten my enemies. Even though they're dominant, and even though they're on the world stage and they're powerful, Hashem, I have so much faith in you. It's in my eyes as if they have already been eliminated. Ki kisa eskol oivai lechi. Now here we have a wonderful word. Lechi. On the cheek. On the lechi. And all the Mepharshim say the same thing. In this context, it means bizyonis. I don't want you just, Hashem, to eliminate them. I don't want it to be like, you know, they write about the Crusades, the later Crusades between not the Jewish part of the Crusades, the battles between the Christians and the Muslims. There was dignity on the battlefield. What was his name? Richard the Lionheart. He had an equal. He had amongst the Muslims. He had a match, and you know they romanticized
chivalry.
These battles. That was his opponent.
It was called chivalry.
Chivalry.
Yeah.
They romanticized the glory of war, and even when you lose. You lose with dignity. You wear your uniform and there's a respect. You respect your enemy, right? You respect your enemy. And when they lose with dignity. You go to their funeral also, right? You go, no. David says, I don't want that. I want my enemies to be eliminated with bizyonos. And this opens up a whole world of commentary. Lechi, I want to be able to go over to my enemy when it's all over and give him a smack across the face. Yeah.
I have a question that I want to direct it to Mayor and to Kalman.
Kalman, you've been called upon.
this phrase, Kikisa es kol oivai lechi, inspired Menachem Begin, called his group, what?
Lechi? The food of
because it describes striking the enemy, right? You think that could have inspired the name of it, which of course it's an acronym, but nevertheless, you knew something about Hanan. I'm just asking.
Hilechi is the cheek. And it means over here to give a frask, to smack your enemy across the face. I want the elimination of my enemy to be with bizyonis. I want to see them go to jail. I want to see them indicted. I want to see them in handcuffs. I want them from all the cameras in the world to be taken away into prison. I want them to stand trial. I want bizyonis. Interesting. That's a chiddush. Look at Rashi. Rashi says, "Ki yikis v'yoshem asmin is kol oivai, all of my enemies lechi." What's the cheek? What do you mean the cheek? Makas bizyoni. Turn your cheek so I can give you a thrust. Give your cheek to the one that will smite you.
Liable to be dual.
Beshave it with a stick, yaku, hit al halachi on the cheek. Umedishagoda, makas hape, kmodad omar vayitzav el beso vayir. Chonak. Now this means to choke. It means lechi is another interpretation is strangulation. So now in this context, it's referring to David's advisor who commits suicide. Who is this? Achitofel. Vayitzav es beis. So he put his house in order. He gave over all of his assets to his children so there should not be an estate tax of 60% on his assets. So he gave up all his money to his children before he died.
100%.
And then he committed suicide. How did he commit suicide? He choked, he hung himself. So Rashi says in the Medrash, the word lechi means my enemies should be, they should be hung, strangled. Like Haman and his 10 sons, they were hung up on the ace. So he wants to see Ki is called oivai lechi. Now, is that bezoyin? Not necessarily. It means they were defeated. They were defeated and they were executed. How were they executed? They executed publicly. They were strangled. They were strangled. And that's...
Here's a bezoyin. By Shimshon, look,
lechi hamor, he takes the elephant. Oh, but lechi hamor. See, it doesn't say that. That's a different... That's a very strong bone. Okay, maybe there's some Jewish. You're opening up a whole new world. By Shimshon, he took the lechi of the chamor, the cheekbone of the donkey, and he used it as a weapon. It's interesting. Okay, but it doesn't say that over here. Over here it says makas saper. Okay, so there's a different idea. Over here, the Medrash says that David is asking that his enemies be hung. and being hung is called makas hapeh, strangulation. Strangulation is called, in the term of Chazal, makas hapeh, where the peh needs air. Vayipach ba'abav, it needs oxygen, and when the throat is closed, there's no oxygen, the person dies. And the lechi is the cheek, and the cheek is associated with the entire mouth. Umbedu shagada, makas hapeh, k'mod at Omar, regarding Achitofel, David's advisor who turned on him, and when he saw that he was lost, Vayitzav el beisoy, vayechonek. He committed suicide by strangling himself.
But it was desired by Achitofel.
Okay, it was. It's true. But for some reason, Rashi is breaking this up. Rashi over here, and Rashi. Maybe the difference between the two perushim is there death or not. According to the first interpretation, it just says this. Doesn't say anything about death. It just says David will go to his enemy in public and give them a slap across their face. Doesn't mean that they died. They're alive. But they were humiliated. Mm-hmm. Whereas according to Rashi's second interpretation, they were put to death. They were executed. How are they executed? Well, what we call makas hapeh. Let's go further. Shine rishoim shibarto. You have broken the teeth of the rosh. This is obviously a makar. We come across every different makaris for in the Haggadah. In the Haggadah, rosha. Mahu Oimer Moha Voida Zoitz Lochem Lochem Vulov Lufi Shois Asaminaklol Kofa Baikar Viaf Ata Hake Eshinov the Emorlo. Dull his teeth. Doesn't say in the Haggadah to break his teeth. It says dull his teeth. Give him a warning shot. Here it says the Shinei Rishoim, the teeth of the wicked, Shibarta. In the past tense, again, the prophecy is always written in the many times. Is written in the past tense because this has already happened. May you break their teeth. What is the symbolism of that, Rashi? Shine Rishoyim.
Who broke it?
What?
Who broke it?
Who broke who?
The teeth of the
Hashem.
And the Haggadah. Who is
you, the Father.
Yeah, okay.
The Father is Hashem Shaliach.
Just damages teeth.
Shine, now Rashi here is very important. Rashi over here is saying something very important. Givura son. And it's relevant for this week's parsha. Rashi learns the idea, this principle called the teeth, is a metaphor. I don't think we look at it today like this, but maybe in ancient times they did. Shine Rishoim is a metaphor for Givura Sam, the might and power. Now, if you'd ask me what's called a metaphor for power, it's the muscle, right? You see all of these caricatures.
No,
they show
like
the Zroya is a symbol of might. So for some reason, there's another symbol of might, and that's the teeth. Why? I really don't know why. One example, though, is this week's parasha. It says that Esav, he met Yaakov, Vayishokeyu, and he kissed him. And there are dots on top of the word Vayishokeyu. Why there are dots? In the Sefer Torah, there are dots on top of the word Vayishokeyu. Rashi, Esav didn't want to kiss him. Esav embraced him to bite him. He wanted to bite into his neck and kill him.
In the animal kingdom, the teeth.
Oh, okay, so you're saying the deal. Okay, Dr. Stern is telling us that. What's your first name? I forget your first name. Dr. Dove Stern. You're a dentist. That's why he's saying this. He's a dentist. You see that? He's a dentist. And so is. And so is Rav Mordechai Bienenstock. We have two dentists. I have to be careful what I say over here. Rav Mordechai Bienenstock. We have two dentists. Any other dentist here? I get free dental work. I just went last week. I got gone. Okay. So we have over here. Shine. So he's saying an idea is the Shine is in the animal kingdom. Gevura is reflected in teeth.
Right.
And that's very true. It's very frightening. Very frightening. The koyach of vicious animals in attacking their prey with their teeth. Now by human beings you don't really see that.
The human bite
Dracula.
No, the strength of the jaw is tremendous. The vice.
Even by a human being? Okay. So he's saying something very important. The Gevura, Rashi learns the principle of the teeth is a metaphor for Gevura. In this week's parasha, what happened? He broke his teeth. This week's parasha, Esav's teeth shattered. It says, Vayishokeyu. Esav went and bit into the neck of Yaakov Avinu. He wanted to kill him. And what happened? Yaakov's neck miraculously turned into stone, and Esav's teeth shattered. He needed a good dentist. He needed a dentist, and he was in enormous pain, and that's why he cried. And he cried. Okay, it says in the Medrash. So what is the metaphor? What is a little bit bizarre, is it not? Is it a little bit bizarre that the Torah is telling us some strange things? Really, he bit into his neck, and it turned into marble, and his teeth shattered, and he cried? You know, this is not what we would expect to teach mature adults. Is this really? It's a metaphor. That Esav, the mighty power of Esav,
Yalchar b'chot
tichyeh.
Same thing happened to
Moshe Rabbeinu and Paro. But there wasn't teeth. He had the sword. The sword is neck. But what is the metaphor? The metaphor that Esav's teeth shattered, it doesn't mean Stam, his teeth shattered. It means the gevura of Esav. When Yaakov and Esav had a pegisha, when they met, when there was a meeting between Esav al charducha tichya and Yaakov, who is delicate and vulnerable, ma'isa avay simin levonim, the gevura of Esav was shattered. It's to be understood as a metaphor, and exactly what it says here in this mizmar, shinei rishoim. Rashi tells us it means gevura sam. It means the might of Esav. Okay, next pasuk, last pasuk of the Mizmar, La Hashem HaYeshua, to Hashem is salvation, Al Amecha, upon his nation, Ivirchasecha. Upon his nation is your blessing. Upon his nation, upon the nation of Hashem is your. Now it's interesting, the pasuk here is changes tenses. Al Amecha upon, oh no, I'm sorry, Al Amecha upon your nation, I made a mistake. Al Amecha upon your nation is Vircha Secha, are your blessings. Hashem, to Hashem, only to Hashem is the salvation come from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and Hashem doesn't just provide salvation, Hashem provides blessings. Very good, we said before, because Selah, and we said this is the third Selah of this Mizmah, the end of the third section, and as you said very well before, the word HaYeshua here means to eliminate the enemies. There are two parts to every success, every battle. There is the elimination of the enemy, and there is the success of the victor. So
he took this pasuk from the Havdalah.
I know the whole Tehillim has been plagiarized. Well, he stole it from the Siddur. Most of the Tehillim, he mamash just lifted straight from the Siddur. You know, it's not fair. But Elai Hashem, this pasuk test parallels pasuk Ches. In pasuk Ches there are two parts. And notice there's a mafsik. There is a line of a vertical line in between Kuma Hashem, and then it says Hoshieni Eloikai. Kuma Hashem is Klal Yisrael. It means the good. Lift me up, Hashem. Or Hashem, rise up and give us blessing. That's the positive. The negative is the next section. May the negative elements come upon our enemies. Hoshieni Eloikai. Elokai midas hadin, then the din should descend upon our enemies. They should be eliminated. When they're eliminated, then we are saved. But just because we're saved doesn't mean we have bracha. The bracha is separate. Kuma Hashem is the blessing for us, and Hoshieni Elokai in essence is the punishment and the defeat of our enemies. Now in Pasuk Tes we reverse it, and we say La Hashem HaYeshua. It is only Hashem that can provide salvation by eliminating the enemy. And then, that's the enemy has been eliminated. The Yeshua is always referenced to the elimination of the evil. But just because evil is eliminated, then what? Then what? Al amecha vircha secha. Upon your nation may there be blessing. You always need a plan. This is a very big yesod. In every battle, you want to win. And then what? What happens? There's always a loophole. You ever watch the World Series? It's to watch the World. What happens? So you're rooting for your team. You're rooting, and it's not easy. And finally, they have to have seven games. They can't crank it out in four games. They can't do five, six. It gets down to the seventh game, and then they're losing. They make a comeback, go into extra innings, and then lo and behold, they win. And there's euphoria. Euphoria, everyone, the whole stadium breaks out and they're screaming and they're dancing. Wow, wow, wow. It's 1 o'clock at night. And the next day you come to shul and you daven. And now what? And now what? What do I do now? What's the purpose of life? What's the purpose of life? And then what? You've defeated your enemy. And now what? What do you do now? It's a big problem. It's not just in a baseball game. It's in everything in life. You have a battle. And then what? You got to have a plan. You have to have a plan for bracha. La Hashem HaYeshua. Eliminate the enemy. Wow. Success. And now what? Now we have a plan. Al amecha virchasecha. Now we can go forward with building our nation with the blessing of Torah, Yerushalayim, Avoda. There's a purpose. There's a plan. There are goals. There is bracha. We've eliminated the impediment, the obstacle. So now we can implement our plan going forward of Al amecha virchasecha. Sela forever. Or it's MS, or this is the musical note for the choir, for the musicians, for the conductor. Okay, so there are three parts. In essence, this mizmar, we finished with this mizmar. I'm going to spend one more day tomorrow. I want to go over a couple, only one more day. One more day tomorrow, we're going to go over, I want to go over some Mamari Chazal, and some, we have to talk a little bit about the word sell a little bit more, about the three different parts. There are a few elements that have to be discussed. There are three different parts, three different types of enemies that a person could have, and that's all captured here in this mizmar. Sela, we really discussed much on the region side what it says in the first movie about the word sela. It's very fascinating what the word sela means, and also this also is very there's a lot more behind this story when you take this story and you understand it in the context of David running away from Avshalom. We really would need to spend a week going over the entire all the psukim. All the psukim in Sefer Shmuel describing the details of David with Achitofel and the whole cast of characters, and every little detail of what it says there in that perek is all here. It's all here. So we just can't redo all that. We'll just look at little bits and pieces to analyze some of those ideas, and then we're gonna have to go further. Only one more day to just touch upon a few more things. Take a short break. And we'll discuss something afterwards. Yeah.